And I'm very grateful to him because he made Cleveland for me less intimidating. So in case you didn't know, he's from Cleveland and I had never been to a Midwestern US city. And he gave me a few good pointers. Anyway, so today I'm going to tell you about surprising phenomena in inflation. Surprising, at least for me. Maybe also for you. We'll see about that. Okay, so give the outline of the talk. First, I'm going to give you a brief review of inflation, background evolution, the perturbations. Then I will show you a new class of fast role models that we found where the background evolution is exactly solvable for specific initial conditions. Then I'm going to come to some surprising features of those models. And then I come to the most surprising model, which is this one, P is some parameter of that set of models. And then I conclude. All right, so inflation in a nutshell. What do we have? We have an FRW metric with a scale factor. Hubble parameters given by A dot over A. You have the Einstein equations if you assume single field scalar field inflation. You have the Einstein equations resolving to this. H dot is just minus the kinetic energy of the scalar field, and H squared is just the energy density. The equation of motion for the scalar field is given by that. And if you then assume that this slow roll is happening, which we say means that the field is rolling down slowly its potential, so phi dot is approximately zero. So you can forget about that term. Hubble is roughly a constant, and we can solve this equation for A as exponential growth. It is inflation in a nutshell. Successes of inflation, well, I guess you all know them. Solves the horizon problem, solves the flatness problem, solves the monopole problem. Perturbations on top of this homogeneous background also provide for seeds that will then translate into today's CMB fluctuations that we observe. Yeah, and so the picture that you typically have in mind for perturbations is during inflation, Hubble is roughly constant. So 1 over Hubble, which is roughly the horizon, is constant. Physical wavelengths grow during inflation. So during inflation, physical wavelengths are pushed outside of the horizon. They stop evolving. After inflation stops at this point, Hubble will start to evolve again. And at some point, the perturbations come back into the horizon, start evolving, and we're all happy. So how does it work in particular with the perturbations? How does it work in detail? Well, first of all, we should work in the Mukhanov-Sasaki variable u. Tau is the conformal time. And so this u is a gauge invariant combination of the scalar metric perturbation and the scalar field perturbation. Yeah. So as I said, tau is in conformal time. So this equation of motion governs the evolution of said perturbations. What's the relationship to observations? Well, the scalar power spectrum, which is the quantity you plug into your favorite cosmological parameter estimation package, is given by this expression, which you see here. Forget about the k cubed. It's just u divided by z. Yeah, this vector here in front is z again. And in general, you assume it's some constant times some mild scale-dependent factor. Yeah. In slow roll, you can compute what is ns minus 1. And it's 2 eta minus 4 epsilon. Epsilon is just h dot over h squared. Yeah, if epsilon has to be positive, it should be smaller than 1 for inflation to succeed, yeah, for inflation to be going on. And eta is just the second derivative of Hubble with respect to the field divided by some Hubble squared. All right. So as I said, all of this is happening in slow roll. Let me write this equation again. In general, without going to specifics of how to solve it, there's two regimes for this equation. One is where k squared is bigger than this, the second term, and one is where the second term is bigger than k squared. Those two regimes correspond, the first regime corresponds to basically early times when k squared is bigger than the second guy. You see it's just a harmonic oscillator, you're in the vacuum. Yeah. In the other regime, when this term dominates, this is what we usually call freeze out, right? This guy dominates over that guy. So the solution of this equation will be u is just proportional to z. Yeah. Now, if you remember, pk was just given by u divided by z. So the ratio of those two guys will be a constant. Yeah. This is what's meant by inflation, perturbations freeze out when they leave the horizon. OK. I guess I can go through this rather quickly. How do we compare to Gray's observations? Or what does this have to do with reality? So those perturbations in the metric, inflation will end at some point. reheating will dump all the energy from the inflationary background field into standard model matters. Yeah. The quantity that I was writing down before, the U, was something like the perturbations in the metric. Yeah, so this perturbations in the metric will persist until past the end of inflation. Yeah. We'll have photons in the universe. We'll have baryons in the universe. The baryons will want to fall into the photon wells. And the photons will just stream around. Yeah. At early times, before that of about 1100, we have this photon-baryon plasma. They're tightly coupled. And so while the baryons try to fall into gravity wells, the photons try to push them apart. So we have two forces working against each other. We have some oscillations. And so this whole universe is this oscillating photon-baryon fluid. Photons want to go in, baryons want to go in, photons push them out, and it goes back and forth, until the universe cools enough at about that of 1100. Yeah. So then at that point in time, the perturbations in the photons are frozen out. They don't interact with baryons anymore, and they just stream freely towards us. And we will see them as the CMB. OK, this was a very brief review of inflation. To compare it, to make a connection to our theories, what theorists usually do is they compute some power spectra, which you then plug into, say, CAMP or some other numerical solver that produce CLs from your primordial power spectra. So how do you go from model from survey to observables? Well, from a theorist's point of view, you write on your potential, you verify that inflation lasts sufficiently long, so about 50, 60 EFOLs to solve all the horizon flatness problems. Then you compute the perturbation spectrum, and then you stop, and you call your experimental colleagues, who hopefully have built a detector and flown some satellites. Yeah, they probably will have taken their data, analyzed it, and end up with a table of parameters like this. Well, it's arguable who works harder. So the numbers that are of interest for us is 1 minus ns, which was the exponent of this power spectrum, of the scalar power spectrum, which is about 0.04 plus or minus a bit. This is WMAP5 here. I didn't upgrade the slides to 7 here yet. And this guy, which is the overall amplitude. And so it's tiny, tiny fluctuations with a slight scale dependence. OK, before I go on, important point to make here that I like to stress every time I give this talk, just because ns is close to 1, this doesn't mean that the universe really slowly rolled. Yeah. Slow roll was just an approximation we did to solve the perturbation equations. If the scalar field did not roll slowly, probably perturbations would be bigger or smaller or whatever. We don't know. There's no way to compute things if we don't assume slow roll.
But that you don't mean that.
Again?
You don't mean that. There is a way to compute things even if you don't.
Yeah, you can do it numerically, but you can't. You have to solve it model for model for model for parameter set for parameter set for parameter set, yeah? But there is no other way.
Do we need slow roll to get 60 EFOLs in inflation?
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, it depends on what you mean by slow roll. There's some competing definitions of slow roll. One definition says just epsilon has to be small, and the other definition says slow roll means epsilon and eta, the second slow roll parameter, have to be small. And the models that we show here, that I'll show you in a minute, for this, only the first definition holds. So eta, the second slow roll parameter, is large. It can be order 10, 100, however big you want it. And still you get 60 or however many e-folds.
Does that mean the n minus 1, the formula for n minus 1 will change?
No. It does not change.
So you have small epsilon and large eta.
Yeah. And at least in this model here that I'm showing now, there, the formula will hold. I'll show you how we get there in a minute.
Wait, yeah. What's the intuition to this? I thought that we want slow roll so that the horizon size stays constant or near constant for a while.
But
why do you want that?
Is much more.
Sorry?
But that's much less constraining than ns minus 1.
Why would you want the horizon to be roughly constant? All you want is exponential expansion. And as long as epsilon is smaller than 1, you have exponential expansion. The second slow roll parameter can be as large or as small as you want, a priori. Yeah. OK, so this is the one parameter family of fast roll models that we want to be discussing. So the potential is just some.
So what happens there is, so you define every heating temperature, first of all, that constraint depends on when the heating happens. Yeah. And when you do that, then you get some upper bound on epsilon, but I think the best, I don't think it goes like, it could be a minus a ter or something. It doesn't have to be this close to minus one.
To one.
To one.
Yeah,
yeah. That value being exactly minus
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
There must be a price to pay. You don't, it's been around for 30 years, the Linnaeus law.
Something else has to happen.
The assumption you need to solve the perturbation equations, nothing else. If you want to analytically solve the perturbation equations for the scalar field, you need slow roll. Yeah, all techniques that are out there, whatever WKB approximation, using Hankel functions, you name it. They all, one way or the other, assume slow roll. Without slow roll, you can't compute things unless you use a computer.
Let's say you had a potential that's nearly, you have nearly slow roll, but mm-hmm. instead of the potential being nearly flat, you have something really, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the horizon will go, the horizon size will go like that,
mm-hmm.
which means that the spectra will be going like that. Can't we exclude that experimentally?
Yes, we can exclude that experimentally.
Right, so how can you go far beyond that and say we don't have slow roll at all, but instead we have some plus?
Take a look at this.
The N minus one is epsilon and eta. So if you're going to have epsilon small, then unless you change the formula for N minus one, then you should be killed by eta.
The higher order things become, this is not going past the scope of this talk. Yeah, so I didn't find any model yet where I have large eta and still compatible spectra. Yeah. I didn't find this. This model just does for you that you have long inflation, arbitrary long, and still eta be large. Yeah, so you don't have slow roll in that sense.
The light that somebody pointed that out like some time ago, right? That you can have these.
Yeah, yeah. And this is an explicit realization of this.
I mean, isn't looking at eta and epsilon like looking at first few terms of a Taylor expansion?
Exactly.
So you're not really talking about the overall shape, you're just talking locally what the shape is.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So. And if slow roll doesn't hold, which means if the higher order terms are bigger, then who knows what's happening?
Then it doesn't converge.
Yeah, you pretend it doesn't converge, but maybe you can cook up some weird potential, maybe even with wiggles, we're still, through some magical calculation,
the
spectrum will be flat.
The whole thing is when epsilon and eta and the higher order terms are small, the equation is a Bessel equation, I know how to solve it, I know what the MS is going to be. But if this is another equation, you need numerical calculation,
yeah, and it's something that I'm not sure whether people appreciate this fact.
So maybe you're suggesting like finish this example.
Okay. All right. So back to this potential. It's just a normalization, an e to the minus something exponential factor constant minus a quadratic. Yeah. So there's two cases: if this p is positive or negative. If p is negative, the potential looks like this. It's unbounded from below. If p is negative, if p is positive, it looks like that. Yeah. In this case, inflation would happen rolling towards this position here. I see skepticism, yes, because how would you end inflation? But let's forget about that for a minute. Yeah. In the positive p case, inflation happens rolling down from here. And what you can't see here, because it's just the scales aren't bright enough, it actually dips below zero for a little bit and approaches zero from below. Yeah. However, as I will show hopefully later on the slides, that the potential will only become negative after inflation stopped. Yeah. So presumably after reheating happened and all those things. You can play around with things to make this a realistic model. I'm not saying this as a realistic model. I'm saying this as a model where you can at least partially solve the equations analytically. All right. So I told you for some specific set of conditions you can solve this. I'm going to write everything in terms of number of e-folds, but defined as plus HDT, but minus, contrary to convention. Yeah. And for this, you can write exactly down what's Hubble as a function of the number of e-folds, what's epsilon, what's the field. So this model is solved for one set of initial conditions. Yeah. It's implicit in here is the relationship between phi and phi dot, basically.
You can't tell us what it is?
I don't think I have it written down.
Is it kind of starting at the top, or are you kind of?
No, it's like, I'll show you phase space plot in a minute. Okay, so as I said, epsilon is exponentially small. Here, if you want inflation to last 60 e-folds, say, and you have p positive, then epsilon naught has to be a tiny number. Yeah, and for most of inflation, epsilon will be tiny, tiny, tiny. When all scales of interest leave the horizon, epsilon will be tiny. And we can, yeah. If p is negative, epsilon is a decaying function of time, which is just what you would expect here, right? The field is running down, 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 but inflation never stops. Yeah. Epsilon goes towards zero, goes towards the zeta, but never actually reaches it.
So the point of the slow roll is it's a fine tuning of the potential.
Yeah.
So if you don't have that anymore, you have it somewhere else.
What do you mean
you
by
fine tune something else to compensate for not having
yeah.
that potential?
Basically.
So what is it you're fine tuning now?
Well, I find you think that epsilon is yes, really, 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 really tiny.
Well, yeah,
that's
well,
my fine
why
tuning.
Why is it?
Why? It's a consequence of the equations of motion.
Because you, so
I'll discuss with you later how I ended up with exactly this shape and why I found this.
You're committing the crime in a different place.
I'm fine tuning things. I'm fine tuning things. All right, so eta is exactly given by minus p over 2 plus epsilon.
In that case, eta is also exponentially
no, p over 2, you can choose p to be anything.
Okay.
Yeah, you see this solution works for everything. If I make p minus 100, inflation lasts forever, bearing tunneling out of there and whatnot. Yeah. Eta is a huge, huge number.
The right picture
is for positive p. The left picture is for negative p.
So this is the exact solution to Friedmann equation.
Yeah, this is an exact solution for the Friedmann equation. Not for generic initial conditions. As you see, I don't have any freedom. I just have one parameter here that I'm free to choose, basically, which is epsilon naught. Yeah, normally it's a second order equation. I would need two initial conditions, two parameters to choose.
Is it safe to say that if p is positive, mm-hmm. then it has to be less than 1 if the number of e-foldings or minus 80?
You tune epsilon naught.
You can tune epsilon naught,
which means
epsilon naught defined.
Epsilon naught is some parameter that you pick, and if you reach the initial value of phi, how far up you start.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so tuning epsilon naught, I can accomplish positive large p.
Yeah. Okay, so as I said before, well, the potential drops below, so in principle we could, I mean, all we care about for this exercise is the field going down here, so we might as well just define it piecewise, say, up here by constant or whatever you want, yeah, if you're not really comfortable with the potential becoming unbounded from below. Yeah. Now we come to the generic phase space of this model. This is for negative p, once again, p minus 2. This black dashed line is the exact solution we have. And all the other colors are other, well, gridded initial conditions. I just placed the field initially somewhere along here and along there. You see repellers here and there, which correspond to the maximum of the potential. Remember, for the negative p case, the potential looks like this. So at phi is 2, plus or minus 2, I have the maximum. If I start further here, the field will just rush away. And now let's see whether we have a slow roll model. Well, if you talk about slow roll model, the effect that you usually refer to comes from taking the equation of motion for the scalar field and forgetting about the phi dot dot term. Yes, Nathan.
On the previous slide, so I agree that in terms of the classical homogeneous evolution that you can make p arbitrarily large and positive and still get arbitrarily many e-folds by putting the field, basically when you say tune epsilon not to be arbitrarily small, you mean put the field close enough to the top of the field.
Yeah.
But I guess when you include quantum fluctuations, you'll...
Yeah, that might change.
You'll end up having to make p, if it's positive, too small because...
Otherwise, the field will jump around, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, and the velocity. And phi dot has to be extremely small.
Yeah, I mean phi dot, I mean for our background to work, phi dot is prescribed. Once you select phi, you also know what's phi dot. There's no more freedom to choose. Yeah.
In the primary line, that would be the argument that would tell you that eta had to be small, right? So that's the thing that you're arguing around.
This is for positive p. Yeah, for negative p, I can do whatever I want.
But just in general, the loophole where you sit at the top of the hill.
Here, for positive p, I sit on top of the hill.
Here.
There's from any point here, it is an infinite amount of time until inflation stops. I mean, inflation never stops in this picture, classically.
That's certainly true, yeah.
Right? And still, eta is huge. Yeah? I make eta, whatever, I choose p to be minus 100, as I said. Yeah? Eta is 50.
But is it fair to say that the two kinds of loopholes you're pointing to are if you have eternal inflation, so you just never end inflation, so then there's no constraint on anything because you just sit somewhere.
Yeah.
And the other one is if you just sit right at the top of the hill at rest, where normally the quantum fluctuations would be the part that would tell you what data makes more.
Mm-hmm.
Are those the two loopholes that we're seeing in this problem?
I wouldn't call this eternal inflation because we get later to how computing the tunneling rate and see how you can get out of this minimum and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, if you want, classically this would be eternal inflation, or you can have an inflation end by coupling it to a second field that has a very narrow trench around here or something like that. Yeah.
So what is helpful here is eta is almost constant.
Yeah, eta is almost constant.
What is the ratio of pressure to density during inflation? Because it's close to minus one.
Close to minus one, I think.
Trivial model.
Should be close to minus one. Yeah, should be close to minus one. I mean, epsilon is tiny, 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 right? So this means Hubble has to be very well conserved.
So the slow rho has been converted into tiny, tiny epsilon.
Yeah.
That's,
I mean, as I said, there's two definitions of slow rho. One is just epsilon is tiny. In this sense, yes, this is a slow rho model. The other definition of slow rho is epsilon and eta are tiny. And there's two competing definitions floating around. It's not always clear what people are talking about when they say slow rho.
But so far though, it's always true that your loophole is that if you make the derivative of the potential zero, and as long as you sit there, you're good. It's more or less permanent.
Yeah. Well, this is not the case here. I'm not sitting there. I'm always moving towards it, just very, very slowly.
At some point, the quantum fluctuations will take over.
Yeah, they will take over. They might kick you back up, but you will still roll towards that. Inflation will never end.
But normally, the argument against one of those would be that either you have to end inflation or you have to start it. So then you have to start it.
Yeah, sure.
One other question.
Mm-hmm.
In standard inflation, the potential is a generic potential in quantum field theory. Mm-hmm. And I have defined it before.
Yeah.
1/2 m squared phi squared lindus.
Mm-hmm.
What is this thing? What is the potential?
Yeah, I showed it just
as a field theory thing.
Here. That's the potential.
Yeah,
where it's coming from, it's cooked up.
He just said that the potential generically have stationary points.
Yeah.
If you have a stationary point, then you wouldn't have as much inflation as you like.
Yeah. I also didn't make any statements about renormalizability or anything like this. Yeah, I didn't look at this here either. Yeah. Whoops.
Yeah, but one thing that's surprising to me, I know you mentioned this, but eta goes to a constant, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying the second derivative of h divided by h goes to the constant.
Yeah.
So how is it's just the second derivative? The second derivative is just the curvature. So
it's just the curvature. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So coming back to the Sorolla's factor. And for the computer Sorolla's factor, what you usually do is you take the equation of motion for the scalar field and you forget to find out that term. Yeah. This would be amounting to solving this equation. Yeah. Which we can write down for what it is for our model, because we have the complete solution. And we see it's minus 2/3 h naught. Yeah. If I write down what's exactly phi dot in terms of phi, there's a different prefactor. So this really is not a slow roll model. Yeah. You can see it if you zoom in. This red line here would be the slow roll attractor, and the black dashed line. This is the real solution that we have. Yeah, you see, all the trajectories from phase space end up on this attractor, not on the red line. It's just a zoomed-in version of that one here.
Okay, the first one you obtain by taking phi double dot to zero, and the second one.
Yeah, the second, I know what's phi is a function of n, so I can compute what's phi dot.
Okay.
And I can express it in terms of phi again.
So phi dot is, specified phi dot is not negligible.
Yeah.
So for a small p, those two are the same. If p is a small, then that's right. So if the, for large p...
No, for look at this prefactor. If p would be 3 over 2, then they would be the same. Minus 3 over 2.
If p goes to 0.
Then this guy disappears.
No, I'm saying for a small linear order in p, this formula on the top one are the same. Not the last step, the one before the last.
You mean this one and that one?
That, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's just a slow roll approximation, only works
yeah.
for a small.
Yeah, basically.
So how did you get from the so having said that, how did you get from that one to the next to the last one?
From here to there?
Yeah.
I plugged in p is minus 2 for this particular case
well,
that I'm plotting. Yeah. So let's see what does the phase space look like for positive p. Yeah, once again, the dashed black line is the attractor that I compute. Well, it's our exact solution, which coincides with the attractor. For this model, you see that both the slow approximation and the exact solution agree. Yeah, if you zoom into here, they're really lying on top of each other, yeah, which is what you would expect. I made p positive but small. Yeah, now here the field rolls the other way. Remember, the potential was shaped that it has a maximum at 0. So everything goes towards here and then rolls towards phi infinity. OK, so how would you want to end inflation? As I said before, you can either introduce a second field with a very, very, very narrow trench here. Would be another fine tuning. But I'm not saying this as a realistic model here. I'm just saying there are some phenomena that you usually glance over when you talk about inflation and you assume for slow roll. Yeah, or you can compute the Hawking must tunneling time to tunnel out of here, yeah, and this is given by this expression.
But there's all the inflation doesn't work.
Yeah, I know it doesn't work, but I mean this would be the time. I mean, the Hawking must tunneling time is the time for the whole universe to transition as one, yeah, for the whole Hubble patch. Yeah, if you wanted the inflation to end by this mechanism, yeah. For positive p, inflation actually ends when epsilon hits 1, which is the definition end of inflation. Remember, a double dot is given by this expression. So as soon as epsilon becomes 1, a double dot becomes negative. Yeah. And this happens about 1 over p log 3 e folds. I mean, inflation stops 1 over p log 3 e folds before the potential turns negative. Yeah, so the field rolls down, 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 down. It's becoming negative somewhere over here, but inflation had stopped there. So at least for inflationary purposes, we are good, and don't worry about reheating or anything like that. I'm just trying to tell you this is what can happen during inflation. So what's the status? We have a set of models with arbitrary values of eta, arbitrary big, arbitrary small. Yeah, inflation can still last as long as you want, by properly choosing initial conditions. So if you wish, it's kind of a fine tuning. Inflation ends by tunneling, or by epsilon is 1, or by introducing a second field. And we have an exact solution which coincides with the late time attractor for our evolution. Yeah. So let's compare this now with observations, apart from demanding that it lasts for 60 e folds. Let's take a look at the perturbation equations. Yeah. Remember, it was the general form. Now, if we plug in the definition of Z, we know what's epsilon, we know what's A, because we exactly solved this model. This is the exact equation of motion for you. No sorrel approximations are necessary or happening for this step here. Yeah. Now, unfortunately, I have to make an approximation. Yeah, I have to assume that epsilon is tiny. For negative p, it's clear it's tiny. For positive p, it has to be tiny at early times when the relevant scales leave the horizon, so we put there as well. So we can solve it the usual way using Hankel functions and write down the final expression. And we see that the spectral index is given by minus p. So for this model, we need slow roll to work to be compatible with observations for NS. Yeah. But this, I'm not trying to sell you this as a realistic model. I'm trying to sell you this as a very curious set of models. OK, well, take a look again at how good does the attractor.
I haven't gotten to the curious part.
No, that's coming in 2 slides. Yeah, let's take a look at Z dot as a function of time for the different trajectories, it's the same color coding as on the phase space plot. Yeah, and you see they all go towards the same value. So the tractor is good enough that we can plug in the exact background solutions and solve for the perturbations. Okay, so from WM5, we knew that NS is about 0.91 to 0.99, somewhere between there, 95% confidence. So this would make our model realistic if we choose T between those two numbers. Yeah. But my point is not so much that it's realistic. It's just a crazy model. So now we crank up the craziness a bit. So far, I've been only talking about scalar fluctuations. Yeah, remember, freeze-out happens if this term dominates over that term. Yeah. Tensor fluctuations, tensor perturbations have their own equation of motion, however the second term is different. Yeah. I can compute the difference between those two expressions for our exact model. Yeah. And I see, oh wow, it can be an appreciatively big number. So tensors and scalars freeze out at, well, arbitrarily different times if you tune P. Yeah, so tensors and scalars see different horizons, if you want to say it like that. For small p, it doesn't matter. Yeah, but for large p,
is that the right form? Yeah, it goes to zero.
Yeah, that's something I hadn't encountered before.
Do you have any intuition for why that's so? I mean, in a way, what the tensors see is sort of obvious, right? They actually see the actual horizon because it's a that enters into that.
Yeah.
How again is it that for the variable, it's the z? I remember the math of it.
Yeah,
but
me
do you
too.
Have any intuition for it?
I remember the math of it. I know the math, but I don't have any good intuition for this. Yeah.
Huh.
Does it have something to do with the interstellar fluctuating, but you're trying to actually get something to get something observable? It has to be the gravitational potential, so you have to mix. So the mixing is what's being driven by the. That's why you're getting the fact there's a slow roll around it.
Yeah, but it's still kind of curious that. Physics for different objects see different horizons. Yeah.
Well, DBI is like that, of course, right?
What is that?
DBI inflation. You have
yeah, but you have a different sound speed, yeah.
Yes,
those guys.
Sound speed different than one.
Yeah,
then,
but those guys don't have necessarily different sound speed, right?
Yeah, this is not that.
Yeah.
So how do you distinguish between this model and the standard slow roll? How do I know which is correct?
I'm not telling you this as the correct true model of the universe. For large values of p, I'm just telling you this is what can happen if you're not careful. Yeah, this is one of the things you never, or at least I never thought about when I learned about inflation. It was often intuitively clear, oh yeah, you have a horizon, it's 1 over h, and the wavelength of the tensors and scalars, as soon as it passes over it, they both stop oscillating. End of story. Yeah.
So far you haven't, I don't know if you're going to be intending to argue that there is a case which is classical inflation which has an acceptably small n minus 1?
No, that case I don't make. I'm not saying I have a fast roll model with n s minus 1 being approximately 0. I'm not claiming that. Nathan?
Physically, the effect here is different from DBI inflation in the sense that DBI inflation tensors and scalars have different, actually have literally different sound or sound rad.
Yeah.
Whereas here, what you mean by the horizon is the sort of transition moment in which a given fluctuation goes from, its action goes from much greater than h bar to much less than, or it's to the other, it's when it goes from quantum to classical. So,
yeah.
And so for the tensors, they have some actions just like a normal massless scalar field basically, but for the zeta, there's this overall vector of epsilon in front of the action. It's like an action for a massless scalar field times epsilon. So epsilon is really, really tiny, and you can have parametrically different.
It's not so much epsilon being tiny, it's epsilon being nearly constant. And the difference here is in the z prime or the z double prime. The point is that the z double prime over z is equal to a prime over a in the limit that epsilon is constant.
No,
not necessarily
limit
that it's small. And the time derivative of epsilon is related to eta.
Mm-hmm.
There's an eta in there. So the fact that he's finding that z double prime over z is different from a double prime over a, he's saying that epsilon is varying noticeably during inflation. And that's the different friction terms. I mean, I think you can almost see that extra z is like an added friction
that comes from evolution in epsilon in addition to your normal bubble friction from the expansion. And so since eta is large, epsilon phi is not negligible, and that's why he's getting the difference between these two friction terms.
Anyway, once again, this is only in terms of formula. I don't have any intuition for it.
Other thing is like, remind me, z plus always related to rho plus p divided by rho, but a double prime is related to rho plus 3p, right? So maybe there's something.
I don't remember how they're related to rho and p. I can write it down in terms of epsilon and a and those things.
In the standard inflation, one of the criticisms is that you have severe fine tuning, namely to get delta t will t to be 10 to the minus 5 fluctuations. And lambda phi to the fourth.
Yeah, you have to make lambda
phi to the minus
sure.
12.
Yeah.
And 1/2 inch squared, phi squared, m is unnatural small. What happens here?
Yeah, you also have to fine tune things. As I said, you need to make p small. Yeah, but that's fine. Once again, I'm not saying this as a realistic model. Yeah, I'm saying this as a model with curious properties that hadn't happened, at least in my knowledge, in other models before.
The other criticism of inflation is that there are too many potentials.
Yeah, that's just another one.
So you could count any number of potentials. You get some inflation.
Sure, but I'm not arguing for and against inflation. I'm just saying, in terms
you're
of...
You're emphasizing this fact that the whole inflation theory is extremely model dependent.
We can have it both ways, right? You can complain about naturalness and then also get it to make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, the theory is supposed to predict something. Does inflation, what does it predict?
Let's call it a paradigm and move on to the next slide.
That's a different story.
I think you have it even still find the surprises.
Yeah, well, this is one first surprise, this is a second surprise. Yeah. Once again, generally, if you plot what's z prime prime over z as a function of number of e-folds, I set it up such that inflation stops at 60. Yeah. This guy is now acting as something like the inverse like the horizon. Yeah. So a given mode, a given k, like co-moving k lies here, there, there, or there, and you see, I mean, you can't really see it here, this curve curves back up again. So while inflation is still going on, modes are re-entering the horizon already. Granted, it's shortly before inflation stops, but nevertheless, it is during inflation. Yeah, turns out, we're not the first one, also Leach and Al found a model with this behavior. Yeah, but...
Well, strictly speaking, it's not that they're crossing the horizon. Strictly speaking, that the potential change is sign. I mean, that the prefactor for the quadratic effective maximum, that change is sign in the freezing curve, unfreezing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. Now we get really crazy. Once again, this is the exact expression for the modes. If you plot this expression as a function of p, z prime prime over z, which is this guy as a function of p, you see it's positive, it turns negative, it turns positive. So for certain ranges of p, u's have a positive mass squared. They will never ever freeze out. It's a time varying mass, so it's not easy to solve, but they have a positive mass squared.
If you never freeze out a z prime over z term never becomes dominant, then your power spectrum.
Yeah, it's not realistic. It's even not clear whether you should talk about the power spectrum then, because those modes are still all quantum. Right? They will become classical. What do you mean by a power spectrum then?
Well, I guess I'm just thinking of the usual solution to this equation is the usual 1 over square root k plus 1 over k tau. Mm-hmm. 1 plus 1 over k tau. And so you're saying that for these modes, you never get to the stage where the 1 over k tau piece is dominant.
No, I never. It can be dominant, but it has the wrong sign.
Oh. So what is the meaning of a wrong sign?
Once again, remember it from the beginning, if this guy dominates over that guy here, so remember this was z prime prime over z, this means u prime, let me use some blackboard maybe.
There is some chalk on this.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, did you get the lights?
Just press one of those guys. No.
Okay. All right, so we had u prime prime plus k squared minus z prime prime over z. Right? Now we say, okay, if this guy dominates over this guy, the minus sign is important, because then I have u prime prime minus z prime prime over z uk equals 0. Yeah? And this is solved by uk is rough, goes like z. Times some k dependent factor, but the time dependence is all in z. Right? If I have a plus here, this is not the solution anymore.
No, but that's not true. The equation is still that, it's just that you're expert.
Yeah,
expression
right.
For
it. Yeah, it would be.
So it's still this
it would
solution.
Be this guy.
So uk going as z is still a solution. Because that, you still have that equation involved. You may say it's not an attractor solution anymore.
Yeah.
But it's still a solution, because that's the equation.
All right.
So the fluctuations are just like really small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not amplified. You don't get them amplified. So,
yeah.
You're in trouble.
But you know, the surprising thing here is that you basically beat the horizon. Right? I mean, what is the actual horizon? Now, I'm wondering, isn't that some, could you construct some contradiction to causality or something? Well, I mean, if you look at textbooks, they would claim something like, well, outside of the horizon, nothing should really happen. That's why things freeze, but you have them not freeze.
Yeah.
So is there anything you can construct that really...
A contradiction? I couldn't construct a contradiction. I have, thanks to Latham, some intuitive understanding as to what is exactly happening. Yeah, I gave this talk, or rather a precursor of this talk at CETA 2 months ago or so, and Latham saw it already. Yeah, so I'll show it in a couple of slides. Yeah, but in general, I can't construct any contradiction by assuming this.
You're saying, so I don't see the problem is the horizon scale is extremely small and everything is frozen, or it's the other way around.
No, this says that it doesn't feel the horizon. Yeah, there's
because
a positive mass squared. It's not getting amplified. It's not freezing.
It's not freezing, so everything remains inside. But that's like...
No, it doesn't remain inside. It just says it doesn't freeze.
It doesn't freeze. So because even though the wavelength is larger than larger than 1 over h, mm-hmm. the whole thing still does.
See, ordinarily, when the sign changes, then what goes exponential goes like this, and you have the runaway solution. And that just doesn't happen.
The thing is, so do we have a sound horizon here? No. You're saying we have a sound horizon, but the... the Bayesians, even outside that horizon,
they
can communicate.
And they're oscillating.
Parallel.
Yeah, they can oscillate. They're not communicating with each other. Yeah, they're oscillating. Yeah. Okay. This was not the most curious part. The most curious part is that one. If we choose exactly P to be minus 2, then we have this expression for the potential. Yeah. What's epsilon? What's a? So this means z, which is square root of epsilon times a, is a constant. This means our equation of motion is a free harmonic oscillator. Yeah. Let this think in for a moment. Yeah. So what this means is, if we start off in the vacuum, you will stay in the vacuum forever. Yeah. So you won't have any gravitational particle production. You won't have any stochastic kicks. There's no internalization in this model either. Yet nothing is kicking it. It's the vacuum. You stay in the vacuum. Yeah. Turns out we were not the first ones to discover this exact model. Richard Easter looked at it before. And also Starobinsky.
So how does the potential look like in that particular case? Is it simplified from that?
No. You just plug in P there and there.
Huh.
And it's kind of a surprising thing, because, I mean, normally you would say, okay, well, if I just approximate it around here by some Taylor expansion, I have some mass term, I know what's n squared phi squared inflation. Yeah? Turns out here, all terms in the series conspire to make the effective mass for u go to zero.
So does that mean that the fact that it's undone from the world matters?
No. You could cut it off over here or wherever you want.
Well, so
you can define it piecewise.
Right?
Define it piecewise?
It's only up to a certain neighborhood.
Say again?
Well, you first said it's not just the first couple terms which matter.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say that a finite distance away does not actually define it within some neighborhood is sufficient.
Yeah. Oh, I see your problem. Okay, well, I mean, if you define this potential like this, and then make a up to, say, phi's 2, and out there just by a constant, yeah? You define, you, this fun, this is not, what do you call it again? It's not, the function is everywhere differentiable anymore, right? So you lose that contact of the local fit, of the local behavior here with what's happening out there. Yeah, I define it piecewise. Yeah, it's not a smooth function. Yeah, but I mean, I don't care about smoothness. What's all I'm doing is rolling down from here. I can do out here whatever I want.
But you don't really even care about it that far. It's just the first two terms that matter, right, for this behavior. You just need the squared, the quadratic and the quadratic term.
Yeah, two cases.
And
yeah.
Beyond that, yeah. That doesn't matter, yeah. Right?
That's true.
Sorry, interesting.
Make sure I understand. So the inflation curve is when we're sitting at the bottom there, right?
Inflation happens when we're rolling from here towards the bottom. And there's an infinite amount of time that passes while you reach that bottom.
Right. Is this one of the solutions where you're getting inflation because you started off at the top and
close
to the rest?
No. You can start anywhere you like, here or there or there or there. You get infinitely long inflation.
But
remember, this is...
You're getting long inflation because you stop at the bottom, I thought.
Say again?
But
you never reach the bottom.
You never reach the bottom.
But it's exponential, right? It's
yeah, yeah, but as you look here, this is epsilon. Yeah, it's an exact solution.
So when n is 6, where am I in the picture?
I have to look up what's on the other slide. Hang on.
I mean, is it effectively, are we sitting at the bottom, or are we rolling?
We're sitting close to the bottom. Yeah. We're sitting closer and closer to the bottom. Larger n.
So the puzzle is, will I lose the funny part if I sit at the bottom?
Yeah.
So the puzzle you're raising is that I sit at right at the bottom where I should think I'm just in a little cup and I don't care about the rest of the potential.
Yeah.
And you're saying the puzzle there is that even though I'm really, very, I'm not quite at the minimum, but I'm arbitrarily close to it,
mm-hmm.
You're saying that the evolution is such that the fluctuations of this curvature thing happen to be just purely harmonic oscillator for any.
Yeah. That's, yeah.
So it's like a conformal, it's not as if there's a conformal symmetry.
Yeah, and it's even crazy. I mean, this is just at the linear perturbation level, yeah? So now let's see what happens first, brief intermission.
So that statement was specific to a particular trajectory that went to the bottom. Because you had this, it was a fixed point and lots of trajectories came in.
Yeah.
You had the exact curve, which was...
Yeah, exactly. But the closer you get to the bottom, you would always end up on here, right? This was what I was showing in the phase space plot.
Is the weird part something which is specific to that trajectory, or is it something which is generic to that fixed point?
It's to that trajectory, but everything is ending up on the trajectory, right? Yeah, this is exactly the case p is minus 2. Yeah, everything, no matter where you start, you end up on this dash trajectory. Sooner or later.
Do you end up the trajectory, or do you end up at the dot in the middle, 0, 0?
You, at the very end, before time goes to infinity, you end up at 0, 0. But beforehand, you see a zoom in, you always end up on this dashed trajectory. Yeah, everything is going towards this dashed guy.
But how long are we on that trajectory?
Infinitely. Because epsilon goes like e to the minus n. Yeah? So you spend it between any two points here, between any distance away from zero, we spend an infinite amount of time reaching zero. So it's just, if you want, it's critically breaking of the field.
I don't know if you're answering the thing I'm asking yet. Because if I just start dropping things and let them rolling down,
mm-hmm.
They're all going to stop at that bottom part, right?
And never. Never. Not at finite time.
They're going to approach it and then
yeah, exactly.
It's mm-hmm. Able to stomach and never get there. But is it true? So if I, on your picture there, if I watch all those guys come in, they're all coming in on these different curves
yeah.
And not the black line, right?
Yeah.
And so your statement that they're all hitting the black line, is that something which is kind of, they're hitting the black line as they hit the very bottom? Or is it
no.
Something which there's a
no, the very bottom is right there.
Right.
Yeah, and you see those lines here, they're hitting the black line already, right?
So if I look at the 60, yeah, but what's not marked on there is where 60 E foldings is, right? So
between here and there, there's infinite E folds.
Yeah, but that's the other way, because the thing is that everybody.
Yeah, but that's the way you should think about it.
No, but that's the way in which the model fails, right? Because then you're just always in inflation in the series.
Yeah. I mean, you could then say, I'm making a very narrow trough at phi equals zero of infinitesimal width. Yeah? Make it 10 to minus 100 phi.
But I'm just trying to understand, parse how weird the thing is that you're describing. Is it the weirdness of a specific trajectory that happens to go to the bottom, or are you saying that all trajectories as they get to the bottom
it's on trajectories.
And so if I went to the sitter space, I should look at, I shouldn't need to have this, I could forget this whole story and say that in the sitter space, fluctuations are not behaving, satisfying the equation, I remember would say they would satisfy.
No. The sitter space, I mean, you can't take the limit of the sitter space here.
Why not?
Because it's in the infinite future, if you wish. Yeah. I mean, then the whole perturbation equation breaks down. Yeah.
If you're spending most of your time very close to the sitter space. So
yeah.
The sitter space is a really good description of what you're talking about.
Yeah, it should be a good description, but not for everything.
But your point is that it's not a good description.
Yeah.
And specifically for the
because eta is large, if you want. Yeah, at the sitter space, epsilon is zero, or tiny, and eta is exactly zero. Right?
So does the amplitude of fluctuation diverge as we approach to zero? The amplitude of one fluctuation, zeta, becomes very big.
No, it never grows, right? This is for p equals minus 2, it's just a harmonic oscillator. Nothing's happening to
it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go back to
what
you said.
Well, zeta is u divided by z, which is going zero.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
So,
no, not because that is a constant.
Oh, yeah, z is a constant.
Z is a constant. That's
how we do
it. Zero, doesn't it? No, z is constant.
In this special case, u and z are
fine.
Which one?
The one example that you brought up that zeta is not conserved.
I didn't say zeta is not conserved.
I think that's right though. If you don't have that term, then zeta is not conserved. If you just have.
If you
don't have the z double prime term,
mm-hmm.
Zeta is not conserved.
Yeah, sure, and those guys keep oscillating, yeah.
So that means that everywhere in the universe, everything is communicating, otherwise that should
yeah.
be the usual conservation of the argument should work, right?
Well
apparently not. This is the thing where I'm lacking intuition so far, yeah? I mean, now we get, let me show you one more. thing. So this is what Latham pointed out to me some time ago. Yeah. So if you look at the action for the curvature perturbation, yeah, it's given by this expression. And now you plug in, I mean, normally S grows like A to some number, it grows exponentially, so in the path integral, S growing or H bar becoming zero means stuff becomes classical. Yeah. Now if we look at what we have in here in conformal time, we have minus G is A to the 4, epsilon goes like A to the minus 2 in this for this solution, yeah. And G mean goes like blip, blip, blip. So nothing in there depends on A anymore. Yeah. So S doesn't grow with A.
Can I just, sorry, this is deflecting a little bit of what you're saying, but so the statement, so when you say, in your solution that you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
P minus 2, what, A, if I remember, it was a constant.
It's 1.
Plus, so it's constant, essentially.
Yeah, it's 1 plus epsilon. Yeah.
All right, now there's two things I can imagine you meant by A. One of them was the curvature of potential, and then I can understand.
No, it's not the potential, it's Hubble.
So it's H dot dot.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's H prime prime, D squared H by D phi squared. It's. Which is another thing that's always confusing about inflation, is two definitions of small parameters, and they're only the same if they're small. So what?
So how do I understand that? So I'm approaching the bottom and I'm sitting at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm thinking that if I wait long enough, H is going to be a constant.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying that H dot H prime prime never
because that's the curvature.
Yeah.
That's what they're asking.
It's
so
the
curvature. That's eta that's thought of as derivative of potential, but he's saying that he's eta thought of as time derivative of H.
No, time derivative, field derivative of H.
Field derivative.
Field derivative of H. It's a curvature.
So, so the other notion of eta I would have would be time derivative of eta, and that's going to zero.
That's basically
the
epsilon.
It.
Eta in this case is just that.
Yeah, epsilon is h dot over h squared. That's what you're asking, right? Epsilon is minus, and it's exponentially small, right?
Right, so the derivative of that actually also went to zero.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
But I didn't compute it. Yeah.
But that's
good. Yeah.
You will, because you're just going to sit in
the Yeah.
The point, the reason d squared h phi doesn't move zero is that
curvature.
D phi is also it's also
right.
All right. So this was we're living in this field, a linear level. We don't see any curved space. We don't see any time dependence of the background metric at linear level in perturbations. Yeah. So
I guess to get to Nianish's earlier question about what does it mean when you change sign there? I mean, I think that's when you go to the point that
epsilon is increasing so rapidly that it actually over cancels the growth of square g times g.
Yeah, so you say that you get more quantum than quantum.
You get more quantum. Instead of fluctuations becoming more classical, it's like that inflation and become more quantum.
More quantum.
Okay, so this was at linear level. Now, if you look at nonlinear level, you will find, again, in conformal time, now I make you space dependent as well. Yeah.
So I'm just going to second reset.
Okay.
So
let's go back one.
There's a domain of liberty to the classical approximation as you sink down this wall. And so where does that happen?
There is no classicality for this model.
Yeah, so that means that any calculation to do classically, including the trajectory, are now wrong. So where do they start to
No, the background is fine. The background.
Well, no, that's the statement of the classical approximation is that the background is dominating.
Mm-hmm.
And what you're saying.
This was the statement that the quantum fluctuations will become classical at some point. That's what Levin was talking about. This is for the fluctuations, right?
This whole argument about how things are. Why quantum fluctuations become classical is that they actually expand this background part, which is huge relative to H bar.
Right.
But then the fluctuation part is A cubed times some classical scalar, something looks like classical scalar field action.
Yeah.
But then, so since A cubed is growing so fast, you sort of go very suddenly from that extra little perturbation, that extra little perturbation contribution to the action being much less than.
Yeah, it's zero. Yeah, that makes a difference in the fact that all the A factors cancel here. Yeah, all the factors. Yeah, then for me, yeah. Then the A factors won't cancel basically. If you have a mass term, then the A guys.
But I think one thing is correct. At some point, when you get too close to the minimum, then the classical approximation, even for the background, fails because you have a Uriner stochastic, or the attendant inflation rate.
At some point in the series space, you should start seeing it as a problem.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And that's basically when phi is of order H, basically. Mm-hmm. From the origin is of order H.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell me about five papers. The hope is that as the data improves, that you can keep excluding potential models
mm-hmm.
of inflation.
Yes.
So lambda phi is the thought that's been excluded.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Yeah. How are you going to exclude this?
Well, it's already excluded. I'm not saying it's realistic. This is not real. This is something just a purely mathematical dream, if you want.
Well, what about the physics?
Oh, he's trying to make a mathematical point.
I'm making a point that if we just look at this model, some inflation, some assumptions I generally held about inflationary model building are just not true anymore. Yeah, that's all I'm doing with this.
What?
Some assumptions that I held when doing stationary model building, like freeze out and such, are not true in this model. Yeah, they're not automatically there. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. So, now let's go to the nonlinear level. Yeah, so you open the paper by Malachina and work out what's the action for perturbations in this model. And you find, once again, this guy, the action foot has no factors of A. Yeah, all at cubic level, all A dependence cancels as well. Yeah. It is really unexpected. I mean, so the thing is, you see the potential. I don't see any symmetries in there that would tell me, oh, it's a conformal symmetry. This is why this field shouldn't feel it. Yeah. But for some reason, at linear level and at nonlinear level, the perturbations just see flat space.
This is for that special case. And,
For special case P minus 2. I'm now only talking about P
plus
minus 2.
But you have a symmetric potential, so you don't expect much any cubic. At least I don't expect a cubic interaction.
Have you checked this thing?
Oh. I'm just thinking that if you just at the minimum it's a symmetric, then you don't expect a cubic. Huh.
This is not only the scalar field perturbation, it's also the metric perturbation, right? It's the sketch invariant quantity, so you will have some terms.
Have you checked the thing that Nyash was saying before, that maybe this is a conformal transformation away from flat space plus just a scalar field?
No. I couldn't find any. Yeah, at least I couldn't find any. Yeah.
And the idea would be that this would be a conformally coupled scalar, but you just.
Yeah, sure. But I don't see it. I didn't get it. Yeah. Oh, one thing I should mention is that this only holds in the A goes to infinity level. So there's other cubic terms that have factors of 1 over A, but they drop out. Yeah, so at late times, this only holds. Okay, well, I'm a bit over time. I don't know. So I guess I'll skip this part. So if you start with a non, just briefly, if you start with non-vacuum, but with some non-zero occupation number for some modes in your computer summarization time scale, you can do that, and you find out it's shorter than the tunneling time. It's, again, all for the model P equals minus 2, so you can get some thermal spectrum with a spectral index of 2. Yeah. Well, I'll skip that. So this would be, I tried to find what other symmetries might there be in the potential, so it looks like it's not Sugra. At least I can't construct a Sugra construction for it. Actually, I can up to an overall sign. I can get minus this guy. What other models are there with this kind of strange behavior? Well, if you look at this, all I want is this guy to vanish. So what I assume so far is that that is a constant. What if that prime is a constant? Yeah. Then this gives me an equation for Hubble, which I can solve. Ha, I'm so smart. Goes like 1 over tau squared. Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not an inflating solution, so it's not of interest, at least for inflation. Yeah, and I haven't found any other solutions yet for that. Okay, let me conclude. I showed you a family of models of inflation, where P is this adjustable parameter. Yeah, can be positive, can be negative. So either the potential is unbounded from below, or you're rolling down from the top of a hill. If you make P large, you will have large eta, arbitrary large, and still long enough inflation. In the positive P case, if you start very, very close to the bottom, in the negative P case, you always have enough inflation. Yeah. You can make it compatible with observations if you want to, but you don't have to. That's not my point. My point was that you can have regions where the perturbations have a positive mass instead of a negative mass, they're never amplified. You can have a special case of P equals minus 2, which I talked about in the last half an hour or so, where all the crazy things are happening, so where at linear level I have no freeze-out, I have no interactions, the system will stay in a vacuum. Or I can look at the nonlinear level, and even there, at late times, it doesn't see any, the perturbations don't see any curved space-time, they just live in flat space. So that's kind of a duality, if you want, between field theory and Minkowski space and some inflationary model. But I don't know how far you can push this. And yeah, I guess that's it. Thanks.
Any questions?
Any more?
So if I pick up the standard textbook in our library downstairs, inflation,
yeah.
I find that the slow roll, the thing moves along very flat, fine tune, and then it goes down to the true max.
Mm-hmm.
To get 60 info.
Yep.
So this has statements of epsilon and eta. Now you come along and say, well, forget about that textbook. We can have fast roll, epsilon is tiny, and that.
Yeah.
What is, I mean, this is not good. Maybe I'll come next week with another model, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I need between yours and the standard.
Yeah, please. Please do.
So, what's the predictive power of inflation after all these years?
You can do anything with it. It's a paradigm, it's not a model. Yeah.
Well, why do we pay so much attention to it all the time?
Because it solves so many problems for us. Within this framework, if you can find a model that, if you can write down a field theory that inflates, you're solving horizon problem, flatness problem, you generate fluctuations that you see in the CMB. It does all those wonderful things to you.
Models.
Sure, if you don't care about them, then.
The critical test is the B wave, B mode gravitational waves,
mm-hmm.
the ratio of intensity to scale.
Yeah.
Once we know that, that kills a lot of models.
Yeah, but once again, no, it's again textbook knowledge.
But John, there is no consistent way of getting. There is. I'm not aware of one consistent model that doesn't inflate and predicts all the observation that we see today. Do you know of any besides inflationary models?
Well, there's VSL.
Yeah, I didn't get to that.
That right. Works. We had a talk by an occasion with Colin Mitchell. Flatness, horizon, scaling the perturbation.
Sure, you can build things with
it. I'm not selling it, even though I invented it. Because, you know, it's the point is these are models.
Yeah, exactly, it's a model. And I'm just saying, be careful when you model build.
Physics has to predict something.
Single field slow roll models, do you think
those
are predictive? Single field slow roll
inflation
is
predictive. Yeah, but it's been ruled out to some extent.
For what?
Talking about fire has ruled out amounts of fire before.
So that's a specific single field.
Yeah.
It predicts Gaussian fluctuations, it predicts the rock. 80% it predicts no B modes, no partition waves.
But the ratio to tensor to scalar is the killer. This would get rid of people like the director, Turok. Steinhardt, who don't have inflation. There are all these people around claiming different things.
But then the very thing you is a predictor.
Yeah, they predict a different. They don't have any R0. For me, in VSL, it's a different result.
I still didn't understand this freeze-out. What exactly do you say if you get a freeze-out?
No, I'm saying is if for this T equals minus 2 model, this term is exactly 0. And freeze out was if this guy dominates over that guy.
Okay.
Right?
So since
if this guy is gone,
how,
no freeze
okay,
out.
But what I'm confused about is that from causality argument, if I don't have that,
let me give you an example. How many modes did I just excite? If I hit something,
okay.
How many Fourier modes did I excite? Which wavelength? If you make an ideal delta peak, you have all wavelengths, right? So in Fourier space, things aren't necessarily causal as in real space.
Well, I think another point is that the movement of field is not a physical field on its own, because it's a linear combination of.
Yeah, but you could go to a gauge. If you wish, you go to a gauge where the curvature is zero, and then
yeah, but you
it's
see,
all
that,
delta
but
phi.
I think that's exactly the point. That maybe because it's meant to be a gauge invariant thing, the effective horizon that it sees is sort of an effective, an average sort of horizon. Because you could either use a space like hypersurface such that there are no metric fluctuations, or another one such that there are no scalar field fluctuations.
Yeah, but,
and then, yeah, but you know, for one of those. Space like hypersurfaces, the horizon is such size. For another space like hypersurface, the horizon is another size, and the Z is probably giving us the effective horizon size that we see.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And maybe that effective size is what can be very different from what the.
Yeah, maybe that's a good way to think about it. Yeah.
Another way. So if I was in Minkowski space, the same thing would happen, right?
In Minkowski space?
There's
not
exactly
such
space.
A thing.
Yeah.
Right.
There's no such a thing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're saying that you wouldn't have three thoughts.
Yeah.
But in cosmology, what confuses me is that exactly because of the argument that I cannot, I have a horizon.
Mm-hmm.
I have this notion of.
Yeah, but this horizon at first doesn't have anything to do with causality, if you want, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Minkowski space, I'm causal, and there's no horizons appearing in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean,
I think actually there's something. This is not horizon, right? The horizon is integral of integral of d tau, for example.
Yeah.
D tau, yeah. And there's still things that are causal here. They propagate the speed of light.
Yeah.
So
I'm saying that the other argument, the separate universes, doesn't rely on this equation. It just says if you have two universes far from each other.
Mm-hmm.
You can come up with a conservation of zeta notation, and I don't even look at this. I just need to have some notion of
what. So something in that argument should break down.
Yeah, something in that argument.
The conservation of theta.
Well, the basic premise of that argument is that the assumption is that if you look at separate Hubble patches, that sometimes called the small gradient expansion or something like that. Mm-hmm. The assumption is that all the k squared terms are small relative to more dominant, only t dependent terms, like z double primer. And so we tune things so that assumption can be wrong.
Or maybe are you pushing the limit of the validity of the Gaussian variance of the Mukhanov variance?
I don't see how.
I think there's no paradox about causality.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hubble horizon is not the causal horizon. They're just usually approximately the same size.
But there is a common horizon somewhere, and above them, I would expect this theta to be not to oscillate anymore.
Basically, as long as they oscillate, you can build wave packets that have some group velocity. I mean, sure, you can have group velocities in principle that are larger than the speed of light, but it has to be very special, and it's not.
Look at Pyrmankowski space. Yeah, look at Pyrmankowski space. Yeah, you wouldn't say it's an equilateral situation, right?
Yeah,
just put a field.
Right.
Yeah,
but
put you're good, right?
The inflation is the ultimate example of how this causality is not this causal horizon is not the whole horizon. Inflation is a way of saying that actually points that are much more distant than the Hubble distance today
mm-hmm.
actually can be put are in causal contact. They could have sensed things just slower than speed of light that reach each other.
So does that mean this equation breaks down at that limit? Reach the causal horizon for some Fourier model?
If you go even larger than the maximum hatch inflation.
Let's say, yeah, this what we are looking at here is not, you're saying the causal horizon is much bigger than this.
But this is not the horizon. Z double prime over this is not the horizon.
No, I agree, but I'm saying limit,
mm-hmm.
and at some point I have to look at the wavelength, a perturbation whose wavelength is larger than the causal horizon, even though it's not this. This equation? It doesn't apply to that particular
one. But I guess once you get that big, then maybe you're no longer guaranteed that you can think about perturbations about the
Magnitude
background.
It's a story of the party line on the Mukhanov variable in the Sitter space, and if I pick up some to zero, it looks like the singular thing to be building.
I think that's true, that this
mm-hmm.
does break, Mukhanov variable does break down as you get very close because of that, the final fluctuations become comparable to the amplify to the classical functions. So at some point, when you get too close to the minimum, then the gauge breaks down, you don't trust it.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I mean, intuitively, yes, but I mean, I never heard any model, but I mean, if you look at, should I say it here, string theory inflation model, most for a long, long time, they have models with epsilon also tiny, tiny, tiny,
mm-hmm.
right? And then nobody complained. The whole point was, let's build some model of inflation where I can get observable b-modes, which means non-negligible epsilons.
They're not anywhere near the Sitter space, right? They're not sitting in there.
If epsilon is tiny, then...
But those models, they are one of the culprits. So those models have, there are exponential potentials that kind of roll, and you're on a shoulder, and you roll off.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not anywhere near.
I see.
What happens to gravitational waves?
Suppressed. Much, much suppressed. Epsilon is tiny, so they're exponentially suppressed. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but here you could have a situation where you have a lot of gravitational waves, but the Mukhanov variables are not amplified at all.
Yeah.
So this is a pity because...
Yeah, I mean, here you wouldn't see any scalar perturbations in this model. Yeah.
So we wouldn't be there to see. This
is the only gravity.
Yeah, you wouldn't see any.
This is a pity because the brain, banging brains, oscillatory universe model for Fourier, Steinhardt, Turok.
Yeah.
the claim is that you want Bill R ratio intensity scalar to zero. You don't see any.
Mm-hmm.
And now you've got inflation model that says, I can get that anyway. This is less than fortunate.
Once again, I'm not saying this is realistic. Yeah.
You get just all tensor
tensors. You get small tensors. Sure, you can build many imaginary models with small tensors.
Wow.
Yeah.
Facility model. Two rockets doesn't have zero.
But
in gravity, you
want to
get in.
But that's not surprising. I think people knew that in.
No, I'm not saying it's surprising, but it's a model. Okay. The test models, that's how we do this. And the statement has been, at least I understood, that we can test the difference between inflation in such a model by looking at tensor to scalar ratio. But he comes along and says, no.
No, I'm not saying no.
Inflation model where R is zero.
You're putting words in my mouth. I'm not saying this is a realistic model. This model is, with P plus minus 2, it's ruled out. It doesn't work. I'm not trying to build anything.
It doesn't work.
This is not realistic. It inflates, but it doesn't give you a realistic spectrum.
But I do think you're right. I think everyone would agree that if you detect R, then that rolls out. Then the cichlid people would say
yeah.
That rolls their model out.
Yeah.
But if you don't detect R, then I don't think any inflation
is
out. Or inflation is not out.
Inflation might survive and not.
But he's, well.
And if you detect R for so low models, there's like this prediction that relates to the N. T,
two.
And S, and the amplitude, right? So
mm-hmm. Yeah, but this will be very, very hard. Yeah.
The trouble is we can't measure R very easily. That's the test.
Yeah, you have the other single field inflation thing. I should make some advertisements for his paper. Yeah. Well, if you have single field inflation, your bootstrap method.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, again, that's a thing that could provide evidence for, but not.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything. I don't think there's any test that can roll out inflation, period. You could roll out multiple inflation.
But there is one claim. If you see tensor modes with the blue power spectrum,
if you just say that enough to enough people, some theorists will write papers. So
yeah.
There's inflation models with blue power spectrum.
Really?
You just see a model that then with W less than minus one. People.
Okay. So
I
should say that.
I'm not saying I'm betting on it. I'm just saying if your litmus test is whether there are papers in literature about it,
I think of myself as broad-minded, but I feel like that is less than minus one.
You're a principal fan.
That's right.
So I think they should wrap up. Let's thank Pascal again.